Welcome to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, the podcast where we uncover the secrets of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who've used public speaking to skyrocket their businesses and their bottom line. Get ready for captivating stories, valuable insights, and practical wisdom from the trailblazers who've mastered the art of the stage. I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara, and I'm thrilled to bring their experiences and expertise directly to you. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, the premier platform for in-depth discussions with industry leaders driving transformative change. I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara, and today I'm excited to introduce a leader and innovator in the world of entrepreneurship, business strategy, and investment. Our guest today is none other than Callum Lang, a seasoned entrepreneur with an illustrious 25-year career marked by some incredible achievements. He's served on several boards as CEO, chair, director, and advisor. Callum has taken a couple of companies public and been involved in hundreds of mergers and acquisition deals. He's also the founder of the Veblum Director Program, a sophisticated executive initiative crafted to empower women, entrepreneurs, and people from underrepresented backgrounds in advancing their careers through board appointments. Callum is also a best-selling author of 4 books, including his most recent title, Boardroom Blueprint, Boost Your Career with a Board Seat in 60 Days. He's published over 2,500 interviews with entrepreneurs and investors around the world and is the host of his own wildly successful daily podcast, Callum Connects. Please join me in extending a warm welcome to Callum Lang, connecting with us all the way from Singapore.
Thank you. Awesome intro. That's great. I'm really looking forward to it. I know it's been a challenge getting time zones to line up, so I've been looking forward to this for some time.
Well, me as well. This has been a gift, and I'm so glad to get you here because we haven't had this conversation before on this show about the power of having board seats. So let me start first with, I always like to know a little bit about our guests from the beginning, and maybe you'd like to tell me about your journey. You've been so wildly successful from an early age. Tell me about those early entrepreneur journeys and how you ended up all the way to the Veblum Director Program. How'd you get here?
Sure. So I think I started off as a hustling young person trying to earn a little bit of money on the side. And my first real entrepreneurial success came at the height of the dot-com boom. So I was an IT engineer or a network engineer at a time when all the telcos in Europe were desperately trying to build out internet infrastructure. So sort of by accident ended up in that space, and I created a recruitment company to help connect network engineers like myself with these telcos around Europe, which was incredibly successful. And of course, at the ripe old age of about 22, 23, as I was at the time, I thought that was down to my innate genius and good looks. And then of course, the dot-com boom bubble burst, and I realized I wasn't nearly as talented or good looking as I thought I was. But by that point, I'd sort of been, you know, once you've done the full-on entrepreneurial thing, it's very difficult to go back. It makes you pretty unemployable. So yeah, kind of been a full-on entrepreneur ever since. Moved out to Asia about more than 20 years ago, basically because I read a statistic which was, it was looking at sort of big global trends, and one of the biggest trends was the transfer of wealth from West over to the East. And this was sort of more than 20 years ago they were talking about that. And as a young entrepreneur, it just seemed to make sense to be on the receiving end of that equation rather than the giving end. So I moved out to Asia, been out here for more than 20 years, and building businesses. The last 10 years has really been focusing on the capital markets, and kind of myself and my business partner spotted a very weird situation, which is you've got half the world's economy is locked up in small businesses. So 90% of private sector employment is in small businesses. And there's a lot of media around startups and venture capital, but it's a tiny, tiny percent of the economy. And then over 200 million market cap is where you have private equity, and that's where the most public markets happen. But actually, the bulk of the economy, there's no way for investors to connect with business owners. Investors don't want to connect with small businesses. They're too illiquid, they're too risky. And so you've got all of these funds that don't have any allocation to the biggest asset class in the world, which kind of seems like a bit of either a problem or an opportunity. So what we started doing about 10 years ago was finding good owner-operated small businesses, putting them into groups in publicly listed companies, but you keep the founder in control of each company. So it's their own brand, it's their culture, it's their hiring and firing. But now investors can get in and out of them because it's a public market holding company. So we've been doing that for about 10 years to great success. And that was kind of where I started to learn some of the secrets of boardrooms and how dysfunctional some of them are, and how you can use some of that to your advantage to get people that would typically be overlooked for a board seat into their first board seat and go from there. So that's the potted snapshot.
Well, don't stop now. Now I want to chase that subject. I want to know, first of all, let's cover, because we're going to talk about how people can get onto a board, but let's talk about the disorganization that you are very familiar with boards. I've been on a couple of boards. I'll vouch for that, but share with them. You know, sometimes a lot of people perceive those boards that are only for the highest and best, you know, that it requires some special knowledge and certain connections in order to get that seat. No, not really. Tell them, why do you think that boards are valuable, and where they have some dysfunction you could leverage?
Yeah, so I think, look, absolutely, boards are definitely put up on a pedestal. Like if you've worked in a company, you know, every quarter everyone's running around like a headless, you know, chicken going, oh, I've got to get something ready for the board, and the board's flying in, and you kind of assume that these must be these superheroes of business that fly in and make a strategic decision and fly out again. And what was kind of my big sort of learning on this was I took my first company public around 10 years ago. And I remember we went to the investment banks, who are kind of the gatekeepers to the public markets, and said, look, this is the business plan. This is what we're going to do. They said, we absolutely love it, but we don't like your board. And we'd put together a board of people like us, entrepreneurs from around the world, super well connected in different industries, that would be fantastic advocates for us, and who, yeah, basically we wanted to give input onto our company. And the investment bank said, no, you can't do that. The stock exchange and the investors want to see experience on your board. They want to see people with 10, 20 years of experience, like the old gray hairs. So you have to, before you go public, you have to put some of these gray hairs on your board. And I kind of realized, well, there's not that many people with that much experience, which kind of explains why you've got this small group of people sitting on so many boards and with so much control. And I also realized that they weren't in it for the right reasons. They were in it because they ticked a box and I needed them on the board more than they needed to be on the board. So we were paying them a lot of money to come and drink coffee and listen to the meetings, but they weren't engaged. They weren't particularly excited about what we were doing. And I realized sort of as I've been through my journey that there's a lot of people on boards for completely the wrong reasons. Either they're on there because they kind of tick this box of having experience, or they're on there purely for their own personal growth and wealth. And so what you should be doing on a board is looking at all stakeholders, and especially shareholders, but all stakeholders, not just how you can enrich yourself. So I kept coming across these boards that were, yeah, just not at the high level I thought they should be. A lot of them are completely male dominated, and I had always tried to have at least 50% women on any boards that I did, for no other reason that I just find a room full of men very boring. You kind of get into these a lot of ego and arguments over silly things that dissipates when you have diversity in the room. And then what I realized was I actually got challenged. So we had a public company, we had 50% of women on the board. I thought I was doing a very good job in terms of diversity. And then I actually got challenged by a diversity speaker. He said, yeah, you're doing very good. And then what about your minorities? What about disabled people? What about young people? I was like, okay. but what I realized was why it's so hard to get diversity on boards, because you've sat on boards, but if you've even sat on a committee, you know how difficult it is to align everyone to one idea. Now, if you put that in that same concept into the public markets, where there's millions of dollars at stake, where you've got massive, massive scrutiny over your decisions with, you know, thousands of shareholders and the media and everyone watching what you're doing, to a board, even if they genuinely believe diversity is the right thing to do, the cost of bringing the wrong person onto the board is incredibly high. It's not like, you know, you hire a customer service staff. If they don't work out, you fire them and you move on to the next person. If you hire someone onto the board and they turn out to be not very effective, or they turn out to be disruptive, you've got two choices. One is you immediately fire them, which makes the board look incompetent and the share price plummets, or you suck it up and basically they sit on and disrupt all of your board meetings for the next few years, which is incredibly disruptive as well. And so what I realized was that you've got boards all around the world that, even if they want to make the right decision, are terrified of making the right decision. And so a big learning for us was, because I was wrestling with this, I kind of wanted to do the right thing. I knew that we would get value from having people from different industries, from different minority groups, but I didn't know how to do it without taking that risk. And so we came up with this idea of an apprentice program. And basically what we said is, okay, we will bring people on as apprentices. They can sit in the board meetings. They don't get paid. They don't get a vote, but they can get to learn about what's going on, and we can then ask them for ideas. And this was incredibly effective. So we brought on a clinically blind business coach, who also turns out to be an Olympian, and had some awesome feedback about high-performance environments. We brought on some young people, a couple of people under the age of 30. So it was really, really effective, and nobody else was doing it. And there were no other, like, other public companies were coming to me, because at the same time that's going on, for the last 10 years, well, pretty much since the global financial crisis, you know, there's been a lot of talk about ESG, and $20 trillion has been raised into ESG funds over the last decade, $20 trillion, because it became a very hot topic. The problem is those funds can't invest in your company. Even if you're doing amazing things, they can't invest in your company if you don't have any diversity on your board. So you've got these companies that desperately want the funds, can't take the risk of hiring someone that could potentially be disruptive. And so you kind of got this sort of standstill. And so what we're saying is, look, we'll help you create an apprentice board. You can now go out to the market and say, hey, look how forward thinking and progressive we are. You know, we're putting together this board, and that allows them to access this capital. And then what we do is we teach our members how to be incredibly valuable as board members. So how to do the things that directors hate doing. So things like ESG reporting, things like investor relations, which board members are typically terrible at doing. So that in that kind of that first year, while you're an apprentice, their expectation of you is very low. Your delivery is very high. And so if you threaten to leave at the end of that first year, they're like, no, come on. Like, we'll make you a full-time director, because you know, they've had a year to see you, to build trust with you. So I call it a Trojan horse. It's a great way of getting some of the amazing talent that's sitting out there into what was a very, very exclusive environment, just by understanding kind of the pressures that boards are under. So yeah, that was kind of where Veblen Director Program came from.
Well, it's brilliant. And I love that you've gone off after such a diverse kind of under, what we call it, a group of people that wouldn't usually be chosen to be on a board. But at the same time, that explains what the value is. But, you know, it was interesting. I was looking through your website and looking at the program. I was excited about it, but I love how it says it's more distinctive the way you've gone after the people that you want to bring into the program, because you say, It's exclusively for ambitious and driven individuals who want to make a bigger impact and don't want to be held back because they come from the wrong background or the wrong schools or because they look different. So you're very selective on who you bring into the program. What's your criteria of acceptance?
Yeah, so I think that that piece about ambition and drive is really, really key. And I did a talk last night to a group of young entrepreneurs, actually, and I got that sort of question. Yeah, but I'm too young. I haven't got any experience. And there was two things that I kind of wanted to get across. The first is I would rather hire somebody on my board that had inexperience, but had the drive and the desire to help my company grow, that was keen to learn, that was keen to go out and make connections and do introductions and those sort of things. That's valuable. Contrast that with the gray hairs that I had to hire 10 years ago, who had tons of experience, but didn't want to use it because they didn't care. They didn't need to. It was not in their interests to go out of their way and get out of their comfort zone. So that's the first thing to understand. A lot of the value you can bring, you don't need qualifications, you don't need degrees or MBAs or director's certificates. It's a lot of it is just soft skills. Are you willing to, do you have the genuine curiosity to go out there and learn and help the company? So that's kind of a key piece to it. The second piece is I really encourage everyone to think globally, because there's a company out there today, whoever you are, whatever you're doing, that would massively value your insights and your connections, your background, because they're looking to expand into your territory, or because they're looking to learn from your industry. And to you, so I did a one-on-one with one of my clients a couple of days ago, who, again, quite young, in the pharmaceutical industry. He wants to sit on the board of a pharmaceutical company, but he's surrounded by people with decades more experience than him. It's a very hard sell right now. And I said, look, go and sit on the board of an IT company, a real estate company, a services company for a year or two. Get some board experience. Then when you come back to the pharmaceutical industry, you're now interesting. You've now got experience that nobody else in the pharmaceutical industry has. You can give them insights from different industries and how that works. And weirdly, it's much easier to get that out of the industry and then come back. And the same, I have one of our clients was based in the US in Atlanta and owned a cafe in Atlanta, wanted to sit on boards, only really interested in the US. But I said to him, look, explore globally, because it's easier to get a board seat over, just law of numbers, more companies outside of your country than inside of your company. And also, you're glamorous in a different country in a way that you're not in your own country. So what Ralph did was he ended up joining a European publicly listed company called Insergo on their apprentice board, did some great work around their ESG reporting. And on the back of that, he was offered a position for a US-based sports and entertainment company as a non-exec director. So he kind of bounced to Europe and back again. And one of the few positives we can take from COVID is that most board meetings now happen via Zoom. So, you can be anywhere in the world as long as you don't mind some awkward time zones. But you can be anywhere in the world. I sit on boards where I've never met the other board members. So, lots and lots of opportunities if you're willing to kind of look outside of where you traditionally look.
Well, this is great. So any age could come in. I mean, it's one of the few arenas where the, silver haired, the gray haired still has a place to be if they want to participate. So you'll take them into your program as well?
Yeah. And look, I've got nothing against gray hair or silver hair. I kind of wish mine had done that before it fell out. Yeah, the point is that a lot of us tend to focus on what we haven't got. We're the wrong gender, we come from the wrong place, rather than focusing on what we do have. And if you can position, and I know this is your area of specialty, but profile is a huge part of it. If you can build your profile up, again, the law of numbers, if you look at your own network, you might have one person in there with a company that could be interested in you. But if you can be known by 200,000 people instead of 200 people, the chances of there being a company that could see value in connecting with you goes up significantly. So we have five components in the Veblen program that we talk about all the time. The first is connections, getting very, very deliberate. You mentioned it at the top of the show, like, you know, boards are about connections, and that's still the case. Like, you still need to be connected. You don't need to, you don't start at the top, you start at the bottom. So you set up an advisory board for a small company, and then you update your profile that you're now sitting on the board, and you leverage that to be an apprentice of a PLC, and you leverage that to get an actual PLC position. So you can move through it very quickly, but you've got to get deliberate about connecting with other entrepreneurs, connecting with directors and investors is a big piece. Then there's the knowledge piece, and people tend to get very hung up on, well, I don't know what would I do if I'm sitting on a board. It's this big kind of mysterious thing, and there's very little information. And bear in mind, it was so exclusive. Why would they share what goes on in board meetings? Like, it's in their best interests to keep it exclusive. And so people kind of get hung up on the knowledge, but actually you don't need to know lots about good corporate governance and those kind of things. Those are relevant at the bigger companies, but you're not going to be starting at the bigger companies. You're going to be starting at a smaller company. If you try to apply best good corporate governance thinking to a small company, you'll kill it. So actually what you need is very different skill set. And a lot of it's more about these soft skills and a desire to learn. And then we talk about profile, and you know, that you are who Google says you are, but actually in our world, you are who LinkedIn says you are, because the first thing that pops up when you Google your name is likely to be your LinkedIn profile. Do you look like an aspiring board member? Are you kind of talking about governance issues or what's happening in the market, business related issues? So you need to really focus on that. And those three are really about how you get those board seats. And then four and five is value. You know, when you join a board, we want you to be a great board member. We don't, there's enough bad board members out there. So how do you instantly add value to those companies and really over deliver? And then the fifth one is leverage. And one of our mantras is the board seat that you get is never your final board seat. It's a stepping stone to the next one. So your first board seat might just be a local startup, and you set up an advisory board for them. It's very low key. It's very easy to do. But now you can update your LinkedIn profile that you're sitting on the board of a company. And that will be the most engaged LinkedIn post you ever make. Everyone will be like, wow, I didn't know you'd be interested in that. That's so cool. Let me connect you to this person. And by the way, have you spoken to this company? And it's such a big shift in people's perceptions of what you do. And then, of course, you leverage that into other pieces. So, those are the kind of five components. They're not really sequential. You're always on this constant spiral, upward spiral of upgrading your connections and upgrading your knowledge and upgrading your profile and adding more and more value and then leveraging it to the next step. So that's kind of the process that we talk about.
I think that's pretty exciting. And I have to ask you, one of the things I thought was very interesting is that you guarantee people that sign up with the Veblen program, they end up getting a seat for sure. It's guaranteed.
Yeah, so we didn't do this at the beginning, but the results were just so good that we kind of feel quite comfortable doing it. So what we do is we try and get people their first board seats within 60 days of joining. And I think something like 70% of our members manage to do that. And in fact, the title of the book is Boardroom Blueprint, How to Boost Your Career in 60 Days. It's very, very, once you understand, and we've had people come into the program, once they get that clarity on, oh, okay, this isn't about what I want. It's about what value I can bring to the board. They go out to their network and they just phrase things differently. Like I you probably had this when you were on boards. I would get people connecting with me on LinkedIn saying things like, I'm getting to the end of my career. I want a board seat. I want to work less and get paid more. Can I sit on your board? And I'd be like, that's the worst pitch in history. How have you got to the end of your career and still think that's a good pitch? Oh yes, someone lazier than me. I'd love to be on the board. And so that's kind of people kind of get lost in what they want out of it. And instead of going to companies and going, hey, by the way, I see you're doing interesting stuff. Look, I can connect you to some other businesses that are doing cool things. I've got some investors that might be interested. Because nobody wants a board member. The reality is no entrepreneur wants to add a board member. What they want is the results the board member can bring. So when you focus on that, we've had people join the program, and certainly within 60 days, they're sitting on one or more boards. And we had one gentleman, actually, again, in the US, we have clients from all over the world, but Keith reached out and he said, look, I love what you're doing, but I'm a retiree. So I think this is maybe I've passed my sell by dates for this. I said, no, you've got tons of experience that's come in. He joined, and he joined three small startups and early stage businesses as advisors. Most of them were in Europe, actually. I think two were in Europe, one was in Africa. And he was blogging on LinkedIn every week about his experiences, what value he was adding, how he was helping them, how he was connecting them. And one of the biggest companies in the world, an S&P 500 company, reached out to him. The HR director had seen his posts and said, look, I love what you're doing. We'd like to interview you about a board seat. Now, it wasn't the main board. It was a second tier. So he said, yep, happy to have that conversation. They offered him, they did the interview, they offered him $168,000 a year to sit on this second tier board. And he turned it down. He turned it down because he was having so much fun with these small private companies and negotiating great deals with them, and ended up making far more money from doing that without all the scrutiny and headache that comes with a public company. So it can happen incredibly fast once you kind of realize the opportunities.
Oh my God, that's a great story to tell. I mean, everybody in the end wants choice. Boy, he had some great choice there. I love how he came to the conclusion that he did. That's pretty exciting. Well, tell me about public speaking, because that is what the six-figure speaker spotlight is about, is how to leverage public speaking. How has that served you? And my next question will be, how does it serve your students, your clients who come on board? Because you talked about the importance of profile. That public speaking definitely plays into that.
Yeah, so look, it's played a huge part in my life, and I'm immensely grateful to Toastmasters in Bangkok, actually in Thailand, where when I was living. So I was a young aspiring entrepreneur, and I kind of already figured out every entrepreneur that I had any kind of level of respect for were amazing public speakers. They were great at articulating their ideas. So I knew that was something that I had to do. And I remember I was really, really struggling. I had no money at the time, but there was a conference I wanted to go to. I had a mobile technology company. This is in the days of sort of ringtones and logos and very, very early days. And I really wanted to go to this mobile conference, this tech conference. It was like $2,000, which I couldn't afford at the time. So I emailed them and I said, would you be interested in a local speaker? I can talk about this stuff that I'm working on. And I instantly got this email back saying, great, someone's just dropped out. Yeah, we'd love for you to speak. And it was in 2 weeks, and I'd never stood up in front of an audience before and spoken. And I was like, great. So I remember finding a Toastmasters club and going in and speaking to one of the guys and going, look, I need 5 years of Toastmasters in the next 2 weeks, please. And they were like, no, that's not how it works. You have to go through the process. And I ended up attending that. My first public speaking at this conference was an absolute disaster. I had a 40-minute speaking slot, and I think I was done in 12 minutes, and it was just horrible. But I realized like this was something that I really needed to get on top of. And so every week for 2 years religiously, I was at Toastmasters, ended up becoming the president of that club and learning a ton, both about leadership and about public speaking. And then, it remains, I think public speaking and writing are kind of two of the most effective way. Yeah, it's how you articulate ideas. It's how you get people on board. And as I mentioned, it's stage three or component three of the Veblen process is for people to build their profile. And that means being able to come on podcasts and be able to stand in front of a room and articulate your ideas. So it's incredibly valuable. And actually, I use Toastmasters has changed now, apparently, but I actually use the analogy. So when I was in Toastmasters, the first 10 speeches that you do is all about you. So it's like the structure of the speech, it's where you put your hands, it's, you know, how you articulate, vocal variety, all of those things. And once you'd done those 10 speeches, you were deemed a competent Toastmaster, which meant that you could give a business presentation or you could give a best man speech without throwing up with nerves. And that was the idea. And 90% of people left Toastmasters at that point. They were like, right, I've learned enough. I'm now a competent Toastmaster, which is why we all have to endure so many terrible business presentations, because people think they're good at speaking. And actually, if you stayed in Toastmasters, what you realize with all the other sections is it's got nothing to do with you. It's got everything to do with the audience. And you have to understand what message the audience is taking away and yeah, how you get them engaged and everything else. And I think there's a good analogy that I draw in the book around board members. If you, I can teach like those first three things, connections, knowledge, and profile, can teach you how to get your first board seat. If you get your first board seat and go, "Ooh, I've got my first board seat, I'm a board member now," and your learning stops at that point, you're just going to be a bad board member. You've got to understand the extra pieces of the value and the leverage. And so, yeah, look, I'm a huge believer of doing this. I think Tom Peters was talking about personal brand back in the 80s. You know, I think his book was it Me, Inc. was his seminal book on the topic. Yeah. And it's never been more true than today. I think everyone has to do that, and it's remains like the fastest way to build trust is to get out there and articulate. So yeah, I mean, the stuff you're doing is incredible, because it's very, once you make that decision, then you realize how much noise there is out there and how do you get that cut through. So yeah, absolutely critical.
It's true. And you're always so grateful when someone has taken the time to really put a great presentation together and they can deliver it. You are, especially when you're on the board, those are some long meetings and they can be very dry. And when someone has charisma and is excited about what you do and it's contagious, it makes all the difference. So let me ask you, looking back on your career, and it started so early, you were successful, it sounds like, very early, but what advice would you give to someone who is just starting to incorporate public speaking into their professional toolkit? What advice would you give them? Aside from joining...
Look, I think leveraging every opportunity you can to speak is great. And podcasts to me are such an awesome opportunity. I did a post on this week, that's 3.6 million podcasts out there. And that means there's an awful lot of hosts that are desperate for guests. So there's a great opportunity to go and practice and meet with people and start to get comfortable expressing your ideas. And, you know, everyone wants to be on Joe Rogan or Diary of a CEO or like that. Yeah, the big ones. Don't worry about those. Start with the small ones. Get yourself comfortable at answering those questions. And the pushback I often get is, yeah, but look, I did this podcast and it only got 50 downloads. And I was like, yeah, but if you were invited to go and speak to 50 people about your topic, you should leap at that opportunity. That's amazing. And not only that, like you're in their ears for their half an hour commute. It's like, it's a very personal opportunity to build a relationship with people. So I think podcasts are probably the easiest route to start building that confidence and learning how to answer questions in a way that gets the content across that you want to get across, not in the way politicians answer the question that they want to answer, but, you know, genuinely adding value to the host of the show while still getting your ideas across. And yeah, as humans, we actually can't differentiate very well. Excuse me. We don't differentiate very well between a real person and who we see on screen, which is why, you know, when somebody famous dies, we mourn for them. We feel like we've lost someone that we know. even though we've never met them. And if you are on a podcast or a YouTube video and things, you're still building up that time with the individual. And so in your mind, you become more and more trusted. And oftentimes, I was talking to, again, one of our clients who said they'd listened to my audiobook 4 times. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of bordering on stalking. But, you know, that individual has probably spent more time with my voice in their head than my kids or my wife has. And so kind of the level of trust there is very, very high. So yeah, I think the work that you're doing to help people get out and get in front of a wider audience is hugely valuable.
Well, thank you. And I have to say, podcasting's turned out to be a dream for me. I've had to do many a big stage and get out and speak, but I love podcasting because it's such an intimate platform. It's such a great way to have that conversation and to be able to share it with people. I think it resonates on a different level than being on a big stage. Both are valuable, but I personally happen to love this. I think it's just super valuable for people to be able to listen to this when they're on their way and be able to think about it without the distractions of being in the live event. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I also think for somebody starting out, there's a lot less pressure sitting and having a conversation like this and in a non-live environment, because you can always edit out. Yeah, this could have been a 3-hour video where I was talking nonsense for 2 hours. You can always edit it out. Nobody will ever know. Versus getting up on stage for the first time, which can be quite terrifying for individuals like myself.
It was great that you shared that experience, because I think we've all had that. The first time when you go back and you realize, I just took on this huge, I've been asked to do this huge speech, and it's terrifying. And you're sick days, weeks, months before you have to do it. And when you get up there, I feel it always works out fine, but it's the dread of it. It's the anticipation. It's the concern. What if, you know, but you got to do it. You got to do it. It's like facing fear. You just have to do it or you'll regret it.
It is. And one of our mantras in the program is get comfortable being uncomfortable. And yeah, that's a key example of, and I knew that this was something that, yeah, I really didn't think I could be a successful entrepreneur unless I could get comfortable. So I had to force myself to get up on stage over and over again, even when I really didn't want to. And yeah, I mean, I couldn't eat for like a whole day before a speech because I knew I'd throw up otherwise. It was, it's
I'm so identified with that. I can remember to this day, it was just gross. The whole feeling of, oh my God, what if I'm going to fail at this in front of all of my colleagues and in front of my competitors? And I remember that I'll share with you that I had to do it. There was a renowned global attorney that spoke before me. And I thought, oh my God, and I've got to follow this guy. This is absolutely terrifying. And guess what? I heard him first. And I thought, I can do this. I can do this.
So I had the opposite. I had the opposite. I was on stage after a guy called Kent Wertheim, who was the president of Ogilvy Asia. So a marketing guy. And I sat and watched his presentation, and it was flawless. It was fun. Like, he was this good looking, tall American guy. His content was amazing. It was funny. It was succinct. It was brilliant, which made things even worse for me. But what was really interesting, I got a massive learning from that. A year later, I was at another event and Kent came on and spoke again. And he gave, apart from the first slide, he gave exactly the same presentation, same case studies, same content. And I thought, that's interesting, because I was always trying to do a new content because I thought, well, maybe somebody's seen this content before. I want to do something new and interesting. And you kind of start to learn these tricks. Like, most great public speakers have given that presentation hundreds of times before, and they maybe tweak it a little bit for the audience. But yeah, you look at them and you think, yeah, is this a presentation they threw together this morning like I did? Or is this, you know, something that they've been doing for years? And so you kind of learn these tricks and get better at it over time.
Well, I'd like to ask you about your book because you know, the importance of books these days. They're not necessarily the big money makers, but they certainly lend a great deal to your profile and giving you credibility with podcasters and radio shows and television hosts. And the latest one that you did is the Boardroom Blueprint, Boost Your Career with a Board Seat in 60 Days. When did that fall into place? Was it after you'd created the program or before you created the program? And what's the experience been for you?
So I created the program first, and obviously a book is a great way of getting your ideas into the hands of more people. I was able to, when I started the program, I knew that we could build these apprentice programs for PLCs. What by bringing people into the program and doing sharing their journey, I was able to learn, like I learned a lot from them about how we can refine things and how you make it easier. And so a lot of that kind of made it into the book. So the book was kind of my ideas plus what I'd learned over the last 18 months from our clients. And like I said, it's a very good tool. In fact, what I will do is I'll put together a landing page for your listeners so they can download a digital copy. I don't feel any need to make Bezos any richer than he is. So happy to do that. Because actually, if and already the book actually goes live on April the 10th, but I'd sent it out to about 200, 300 pre-readers. And almost every day I'm getting emails from people that have used the techniques to get their first board seat, which is just awesome to hear. And of course, my core business is small business M&A. So having lots of people that now sit on boards that can reach out to me is very, very useful. So more than happy to get a copy into the hands of your readers, your listeners, if they're interested.
Oh, that's a fabulous gift. I cannot believe that. That's very generous on your part, and I'm sure you're going to get a lot of reaction and a lot of conversation out of that. That is a gift, truly a gift. So tell me now that we're getting towards the end of this interview, I want to ask you, tell me what you're most proud of. You've done so many things in different sectors. And you've got a family. Tell me what you're most proud of. What accomplishment is there that resounds for you?
I think as entrepreneurs, we're typically very bad at looking back. I think certainly I tend to, I'm always looking forward. So kind of you achieve something and you go, right, that's off the list. Now on to the next thing. I mean, obviously I've been with my wife now for 25 years. We've got two gorgeous daughters. I'm obviously very proud of them. I think in a business setting, it's probably the stuff that doesn't kill you that makes you stronger. It's the so I think the dot-com boom collapse that destroyed that recruitment business very quickly. Then the global financial crisis. I'd built up a business. I had 42 staff, and then two of my biggest clients defaulted on over $1 million each, and I had to lay off 38 of 42 staff, which was just brutal. And then one of the public companies I went to public that got attacked by international white collar thieves and had to deal with all of that, and investors lost money. And so it's kind of I think probably the proudest thing is getting through those and still moving forward, which you have to do, rather than you tend to look at the crowning a chump. My first book was obviously something that is a big deal, but actually I think it's dealing with those harder things, and every time you deal with them you kind of get stronger and better at dealing with them the next time. And of course while you're going through them you think it's the end of the world, but a couple of years later, it's just a good story to tell at dinner parties.
It's so true. You're always so much more when you get through those things. It does make you stronger, a lot more substance. So, what's on the horizon for you? And I have to ask, because of the rarefied air that you're in, the global in the global community, what do you think is how it's going to affect everybody moving forward when you're talking about entrepreneurship and you're talking about being on boards and how business development is going? How do you feel about it? Do you feel optimistic?
Yeah, I'm an entrepreneur. We're idiots. We always say.
I said that, I was thinking the same thing. Really, Kelly? That's your question? We always see rainbows.
Yeah, we wouldn't get up otherwise. So, look, I sure, there's plenty of challenges in the world, but I think the opportunities out there, the opportunities to reach a global audience. Like when I first started my business, I remember I spent 200,000 euros building a CRM system because there was nothing available at the time. You had to build your own CRM system back in the day. Today, people give CRM systems away for free that have like so much better than the ones that we built. You could only work in your local environment. Yet today, so if you look at Veblen, the CEO of Veblen is based in the UK. I'm the founder, I'm based in Singapore. The operations manager is based in Portugal. Our CFO is based in Australia. The rest of the team is dotted all over the world. There's so much talent out there. There's so much opportunity out there. There's more money sloshing around in the environment, in the economy than there's ever been. So I think using tools like getting yourself a board seat to build that credibility and build those connections is incredibly valuable. And yeah, I mean, I get inspired every day by the people in the Veblen program, and you know, every day they're joining new boards and doing cool stuff. So yeah, I'm hugely optimistic about the future.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm sad that this interview is coming to an end because this has been so meaty and so substantive, and I just enjoyed it. It was mind expanding, and I think our audience is going to really appreciate such a unique perspective on how to take your business to the next level. I know I'm excited about it, and I just want to thank you so much today for coming onto the show and making this such an interesting episode. It's really quite a fascinating path that you've taken. And I'm sure that this conversation, being on a board, is now going to be on a lot of people's, I won't say wish list, on their goal list, because it now sounds like
Get
it's
it
more
done.
doable. It is absolutely doable. So they need to check out your program. For everybody that's interested, please go to veblendirectors.com. That's V as in Victor, E, B as in boy, LEN, directors.com. It will be in the show notes, so check out our show. And you'll also want to check out, he's got four books on the bestseller list on Amazon, especially his latest one, Boardroom Blueprint, Boost Your Career with a Board Seat in 60 Days. Yes? Very excited. And check out his free gift. So where do they go to check out, where do you want me to send them to check out for their new gift of the book?
I'll put together a landing page just for your readers. So I'll send you a link across that could be in the show notes. So I don't actually know what the URL will be yet. By the time they're listening to this, check in the show notes and there'll be a link and you can get a free copy of the book.
Callum, thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's been great fun.
To our listeners, thanks for tuning in to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please let us know by liking and sharing and subscribing. Your support helps us continue to bring you insightful conversations like this with industry leaders like Callum. So if you're interested in being interviewed on the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, or you know someone, check out the show. Go to where you've listened to the show and you'll be able to jump on as a guest. I'd love to have you. I'd also like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Speakertunity. Whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your speaking career, Speakertunity provides the resources, tools, and direct contacts you need to succeed. And it just makes the speaking journey just a little bit easier. We've done all the research for you. So check them out at speakertunity.com. And now I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara, and I'm signing off with a reminder that speaking your business, whether it's in the boardroom or it's on a stage, is a powerful opportunity for you to grow your reputation, your presence, and your bottom line. So keep exploring the new opportunities that keep presenting themselves to you, including acquiring a board seat, and see where it takes you. Until next time, Harness the power of the podium and make every speech a stepping stone to your success. See you next time, everybody. I want to thank you for joining us on this episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed this deep dive once again into the remarkable stories and insights of our incredible guests. Their experiences and wisdom are not just meant to inspire you, but to provide you with actionable steps to take on your own path to success. Remember, you have a story to tell, and your voice has the power to transform your business and make lasting impact. If you found value in today's episode, be sure to subscribe to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an empowering conversation. We'd also appreciate it if you could leave us a review and share the show with your friends, colleagues, and your fellow visionaries. Until next time, keep speaking, keep growing, and keep reaching to make your difference. This is Kelly O'Hara, signing off from the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight.